Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packer fans? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks so much for being here. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews, interact with the channel in any way that you possibly can. That always helps the algorithm. But of course, we always just appreciate your participation and showing up and making Pack-A-Day part of your daily routine. Of course, we are here for you 365 days a year. Couple pieces of news and notes before we get to Justice Mosqueda, who will be joining us momentarily. First of all, we had Marshawn Lloyd, who did get activated to the 53-man roster, but pumped the brakes a little bit. He is now going to go on the non-football injury list. So he goes from one injured list to another injured list. He's still not going to be playing anytime in the near future, more procedural at this point. So this will put him on that 53rd roster spot. And then after they are done with that, once they put him on the non-football injury list, they will have a roster spot open again that they can utilize if they want to. Otherwise, they can hold it until Lloyd is back ready to play. We'll see how they navigate that the remainder of this week. My guess is they probably will add somebody to the roster, who that may be. Your guess is as good as mine at this point in time. Meanwhile, Mark Murphy will be inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame. Packers held a press conference on Monday to announce that. Certainly well-deserved. Have a Super Bowl tenure during his time in Green Bay. The franchise has been consistently growing. They were able to get the draft in Green Bay. Like, Mark Murphy, more than deserving of the recognition and the honor. And that's a pretty cool thing, right? So he'll be going into the Packers Hall of Fame. Kudos to him and congratulations to him. Without further ado, here's our great conversation with our good friend, Justice Mosqueda. We are joined now by the one and only Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on social media at JUMOSQ. Justice, it is phenomenal to have you back. It's a very interesting game to break down. I'm excited to hear all of your wonderful thoughts on it. But first of all, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing all right. Bye week got the best of me. I'm 0-1 in the bye week. Blew out my ankle. Not sure what happened. The whole thing is black. I know I sprained it. I sprained it pretty bad. The doc was like, you can weight bear though, so that's good. Just wear a boot for the next 6 months. And broke my arm. Didn't even know I broke my arm until like an hour after the injury. So the amount of times I've been suggested to play pickleball instead of tennis next time around, it's been through the roof. Heard that joke a thousand times. Drop it in the comments. It's not going to be the last time I hear it. So yeah, that's how I'm doing.
You went full Marshawn Lloyd on the bye week. Just get out. You get everything all at once. Just multiple injuries all at the same time.
I've still got my appendix.
Yes, for now. Yeah, knock on wood. Knock on wood. No, I'm happy to hear that you're doing all right. I'm sorry to hear that. Obviously, that you had to go through that. But listen, you still have your podcasting ability. You don't have to go fully on IR. So we're happy about that.
Yeah, I could still work, which is the good thing. I will say the amount of times that I got asked the question, did this injury happen at work when I was in like the urgent care and stuff like that was funny. So people are at least taking care of workers' comp stuff.
Amazing. Well, hopefully you feel better soon. Glad that you can still podcast. Glad that you, like I said, have to go on IR permanently or for the foreseeable future. And it's great to be chatting with you. Let's talk about this game. Per usual, Justice, the floor is yours. You can go in any direction that you want. What do you want to talk about first?
Yeah, let's start this off with it. Okay. People get mad at me for being negative, even during wins.
I want to talk about that for a second. I don't understand that. I feel like, I don't know, maybe you and I both just live in too much of a world of realism of like, here's what's good, here's what's bad, and are just maybe more matter of fact about it. And maybe not like, I see those comments every once in a while of like, oh, Justice is negative. And I'm like, what? I don't ever feel like you're negative. And maybe it's just because you always say everything with a smile that I'm like, oh, even when he's saying something, you know, maybe slightly negative, it still seems like he's positive about it. But I'd have to say, I don't get it, but continue.
But here's a bright spot for you guys.
Look at this.
Right. Here's a bright spot for you guys. Even in a game where I thought the Packers were going to dominate against Chicago, they did not dominate. They didn't cover. I don't think that's like you judge teams by whether they cover or not. I know it's a funny joke to say good teams cover, right, and all that stuff. Legitimately, one of the bright spots of this game, I think, was the play of Carrington Valentine. I went back through and looked at all of his targets. There's obviously some stuff where he could have played stickier and things like that, but a lot of his targets were like, there was a contested curl, right? That's fine. They're throwing curls at him in off coverage. That's technically supposed to be Xavier McKinney is the flat guy, but, you know, the slot is on the minus split, and that's just a hell of a long way to go out there and cover three to cover the flats, right?
Yep.
A screen, right, where, you know, a tackle gets on you. Like, that's all stuff on paper you're designed for giving up. Really, the only play where he got, like, beat and the ball actually got there. He also had the pass breakup in the back of the end zone, by the way. Yep. Yeah. The only time that he got beat was really – let me look at what target that was. That would have been the – it was like a speed out on like third and nine or something.
He was in the slot. He was in the slot. Yes. It was against Keenan Allen.
It was obvious, man.
Yep.
Evan Williams was outside of him. Yeah, Keenan Allen, 17 yards. So that one wasn't great. But outside of that, he kind of pitched a perfect game as far as like assignment football. Like, could he have – you know, in an ideal world, picked off a contested hitch route, something like that. Sure. Like, by all means, yeah, you can have those expectations. One of the best ways to look at this, in my opinion, and I just wrote this article for Acme Packing Company where I talked about all these stats if you want to find them. So I cannot divorce this from my background because I've seen it work firsthand. So I want to kind of explain that on the beginning.
Sure.
When I worked with the XFL, we had data for college and NFL players, and it was the PFF Ultimate, where you could put in a bunch of filters and stuff like that. And we found by far one of the most consistent metrics for evaluating defensive backs, and PFF has put this out themselves. I mean, they're kind of the front runners on this. It is, you know, yards per coverage snap allowed, or yards allowed per coverage snap, right?
Sure.
When you look at Carrington Valentine's played 99 coverage snaps on the defensive side this year. Out of players who have played that many snap counts, Carrington Valentine has allowed the second fewest yards per coverage snap allowed at 0.43. The league average among those players who have played 99 snaps, right, is 1.07. There are 87 qualifying cornerbacks. Other guys in the top 10 in that stat. So this is kind of like backing to show you the stat actually matters, right? Yep. Pat Surtain, Devin Witherspoon, Marshawn Lattimore, Jalen Ramsey, right? I think people probably would consider Surtain and pretty Ramsey. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So that shouldn't be ignored, right?
Yeah.
Keyshawn Nixon is about league average, which I know is going to frustrate people. Everyone wants to beat up on him like a pinata, and that whatever you want to do with that is be my guest. He's about league average. He's 49th in that. Eric Stokes is significantly further down. He's 65th, again, out of 87 qualifiers. I think one of the bright spots is potentially throwing Carrington Valentine out there, right?
I agree.
And mind you, this is why I brought up the XFL stuff. So before we had the XFL draft back in 2020, we were actually able to, on the front end, show our DPPs, which were basically general managers. Like, they were the lead guys in the front office, but all of our coaches were both head coaches and general managers. So they had ultimate say over their rosters, right? Sure. But the DPPs were like the top front office only position. And we were able to give DPPs basically like our projections over our player pool, right? Because, you know, we weren't in the business of just flying everyone across the country, bouncing around, signing whoever you want. Like, we wanted to sign a player to the XFL player pool and then have the draft. And then from that player pool, that's where you make their rosters. And it made it a lot easier from, you know, a salary perspective. Injuries is a huge thing. Like, everyone talks about how, you know, the combine is like a really what it serves is as a medical thing. First and foremost, because it would cost so much to have 32 teams bouncing around all these college campuses and stuff, right? And what we found was players, which were, you know, these were heavily influenced by these same metrics that I'm giving you guys. These come from NFL Pro, right? Because NFL Pro is giving all the player tracking data stuff now. So you don't have to have the $10,000, you know, PFF Ultimate thing that you can only get access to if, you know, you're part of a larger company or you're part of a team, basically. Those are the only people who get them, right? So you're able to look up these numbers. And the players who are in the top 20 percentile of, you know, our numbers, we gave them just an A grade just because it was easier for DPP guys who are not used to these type of numbers to understand that. The guys who are in our player pool, their retention rate, so not only getting drafted, but also making the final roster, was about 80%. And the Fs were like 5% or something like that. And a lot of those players who didn't make the roster, frankly, were not very good, right? So the stat matters. Carrington Valentine is doing great at it. I went back and watched the tape. There are certainly times that you would have expected tighter coverage, right? But again, the only time he got like beat, right, was that one out to Keenan Allen. And it came in a pretty brutal time in the fourth quarter on that 3rd and 9. But I think,
but also, you know, noteworthy that he's in the slot on that play, which is not his normal forte of playing in the slot in that situation. So, you know, I mean, yes, I still expect better from him in that situation, but that usually he's an outside corner and he, you know, in that situation just got caught up in the slot.
Yeah. And I think, again, that's one of the few ways. I mean, we've been talking about it for weeks, right? We're like, I would like to get an answer on Carrington. Well, now we kind of, you know, we're getting more data points on Carrington and it's still looking good. And at this point, I think I want him and Jair as the outside corners on this team. And that may be a tough pill to swallow to bench either one of Keyshawn or Javon Bullard, right? I mean, those are two players that you're heavily invested in. But, I mean, you're heavily invested in Lucas Van Ness, too. And you basically had Brenton Cox in his first real extended NFL look take as many snaps as him. And that was a first-round pick. So, you know, if you want to get good down the stretch, I think that's one way – one spot for optimism for sure. Whether you want to play Bullard or Keyshawn in the slot, I am
mix it up.
Yeah, right. I do not hold to a strong opinion there. I think I would play Keyshawn there, but if he starts not playing so great, I mean, I understand pivoting back to Bullard or something like that. I think this team has a decent amount of depth. I don't think Keyshawn's a terrible player. Like, I think the gulf between Keyshawn and an average NFL corner is so much smaller than the gulf between Nixon and Stokes right now. Stokes, even on that play, if you look back at it, I think the NFL is going to change how we use the NFL pro stuff. So I might be able to show you some clips down the stretch of the season or something like that when we talk about this stuff. But even on that play where, Carrington Valentine allows that out route to Keenan Allen, Stokes just flat out gets beat off the line, and it's a 3-by-1 formation. So Caleb Williams isn't even looking at him, based off of the, you know, where his read is going from pre-snap, but Stokes just completely shook off.
Well, you know, he played a total of what, 4 snaps in the game. So it's only 1 of 4, Justice.
Yeah. 1 of 4 losing that bad. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like it's brutal. So yeah, that's just been how it's been for Stokes. And like, it still is stunning to me that it took them to week 11 to figure out that Valentine needs to be in ahead of Eric Stokes. I'm glad they finally figured it out. I do think that was a huge step in the right direction. Even if, again, maybe it didn't feel that way live, I have a lot of faith in Carrington Valentine. I think he can be a good corner. And but you already answered sort of my next question for you was like, is it time just to go Carrington and Jair, assuming Jair gets back at some point on the outside? And then again, you know, rotating maybe, because it does seem like they have sort of like a big nickel, and I don't know if I want to call it a small nickel, but like they have a big nickel. Like, so you just put, you know, Javon Bullard in there and big nickel, and you put Keyshawn Nixon there and small nickel, and, you know, maybe mix up the linebackers and stuff. To me, I'm totally fine with that. But I'm just happy, if nothing else, they've made the determination, at least seemingly, that Carrington Valentine is ahead of Eric Stokes, which seemed like low hanging fruit, but thankfully they finally made that change.
Right. But the next hurdle now is Keyshawn.
Yes.
Right. Agreed. And what do you do with Keyshawn after that? I mean, you're paying that guy a lot of money. You're not getting any kick returns because of dumb rule. And I think this is going to even be more exacerbated in the offseason. I don't remember what Keyshawn's contract looks like off of the top of my head, but I know there's a lot of like not guaranteed money next year. Right. A lot of that is up in the air in terms of whether the Packers want to get off of that deal or not. And the way this stuff works, I mean, do you remember when, like, these decisions are made for the kickoff rules. And we're seeing now, you know, they want to have the touchback at the 35, which was what Mark Murphy said on the Packers.com Q&A thing, right? That determination is going to happen after the start of free agency, which is not going to put the Packers in an advantageous situation, because that's just what the scheduling for
league meetings.
I mean, we signed the kicker. I'm spacing on his name now. The one that we got from the Vikings.
Craig Joseph.
Right. So to put that in perspective relative to the start of free agency, right? That was like a third wave free agency signing. And you're not going to have answers on that before the Keyshawn situation. So it gets down to a point where it's like, okay, do we want this guy to be our slot long-term? Do we want Bullard to be our slot long-term? I don't know how feasible it is to go into the offseason without having an answer at that situation. So I'm fine.
This is a big one. San Francisco is coming to Green Bay for an epic matchup on Sunday afternoon. And with a recent San Francisco loss, Green Bay could just put their playoff odds in jeopardy. That's not all we're looking forward to this week. We're also looking forward to another winning week on Prize Picks. With Prize Picks, you can win up to 100 times your money with as few as 4 correct picks. And right now, you can sign up and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season. Which players are going off, which ones aren't, make your picks in fewer than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, yeah, I'm guessing Christian McCaffrey is going to get his against Green Bay's defense, but I also expect a huge week from both Jaden Reed and Tucker Kraft. The best part, whoever you want to go with, there are a ton of options out there that you can choose from. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 play. Prize Picks. Run your game. Hey everyone, with the holidays creeping up faster than your great aunt's fruitcake recipe, I've got something way better to share with you. If you want to look sharp for all those festive gatherings and maybe finally win that best groomed at the family dinner award, check out the latest masterpiece from Manscaped, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver. Trust me, it's like Rudolph for your face, guiding you to a smooth, irritation-free shave. Head over to manscaped.com and join the over 11 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by using code PACKADAY for 20% off plus free shipping. Now, you may have recently seen Mustache Andy lately. It was a beautiful sight to behold, and that wouldn't have been possible without the Chairman Pro's Flex Adjust technology, which is basically like the holiday miracle of shaving. And when I needed even more precision to get that mustache look just right, there was the Precision Lock. And when you lock it in, the blade head sits firm so you can achieve a more precise shave, and that's exactly what I did. So get the Chairman Pro today and experience a shave that is as smooth as you deserve. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. What are you waiting for? Could not agree more. As far as Nixon's contract, he will have a cap number next year of $6.8 million, a little bit more than that. He has a dead cap number remaining of $4.3 million, basically $2.15 for his signing bonus each of the remaining 2 years. So they could have a $2.5 million savings by moving on. They could obviously do more than that if they wanted to do a post-June 1st cut. So there is ways to get off of that contract if they wanted to. My guess, like anytime you hear Bisaccia, LaFleur, Halfley, anyone talk about Nixon, they absolutely love him. So I don't think he's going to go anywhere next year. I think the following year would probably make that decision, but
is he willing to take a pay cut is a big question. Like, you're not paying a true backup who's also not starting in the I wrote about this in the offseason, and everyone said he wasn't being paid as a slot defender. He was being paid as a returner. He's getting paid like one of the best slot defenders in the sport.
Yeah.
So that amount of money, you're not going to have a guy sit on the bench when you have a question mark on what the return game is going to look like in that type of situation. And I know these are all offseason things. People want to talk about the Bears game and all that
stuff. No, we can multitask. We're good.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's a – that is now a major question mark. That is now a major question mark in my mind where I'm like, okay, what are we going to do about the Keyshawn deal? And I think how they choose to play the slot position moving forward is going to be a big question mark too, because the slot is a position that, like, even you mentioned, you know, you're like, they play, you know, they have a bigger slot, they have a smaller slot. They've never used both in the same game, though, right? It's they enter these games and they're like, okay, Bullard is our slot this week. Okay, Keyshawn is our slot this week. They've never really mixed it up on a game-to-game basis based off of, you know, situational football or anything like that. And maybe it's because, you know, year one install on a new defense, all these guys are new to it, right? All that stuff. Bullard is a rookie. You want him to get snaps, all that. But until I see it, I'm going to be worried about Keyshawn not being on my team and then them changing the rules and then him being lights out and getting first team all pro for someone else.
Yeah, that would be brutal. But I don't know. I don't know if they are going to change it again. I don't know. We'll see. That's another.
They have to.
You would think so. They can't keep it as
is. You have a two-time back-to-back first team all pro kick returner who just will not get the ball. And I don't know if it's helping the Packers. Is it helping the Packers that they're getting it at the 30? I don't know. I would have to look at the average yard per position.
He had two returns this week, right? Didn't do anything with him?
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, they're not getting them in volume.
It almost feels like they're taken aback or like they're shocked when he actually gets the ball. And like, oh, crap, I actually have to block. Because, like, it's just gone into the end zone every single time. I'm sure they're, like, almost caught off guard with it at some point. But, yeah, I want to talk about, you know, obviously from a secondary standpoint, the secondary in general is A, going to look better when Jair gets back healthy. B, yes, look a whole heck of a lot better if they were able to get a little bit more pressure up front. This has been a topic of discussion for probably way too long now. You mentioned Brenton Cox getting a lot more playing time, makes a couple impact plays, albeit unblocked on both of them. Matt LaFleur effusive in his praise of Brenton Cox in his press conference today. Anything that you saw from a pass rush standpoint that gave you any modicum of hope, or are we still in no man's land? I've watched the all 22 completely on the offensive side yet. I've not been able to get to it fully on the defensive side. So anything that you've seen that you are looking at from a positive takeaway from the pass rush standpoint?
Yeah, the athleticism is good. He's not only a relatively explosive athlete. I think he's probably less explosive than, you know, the standard that like an LVN or a Rashawn Gary set,
right?
Which, you know, that's tier one athleticism at the most athletic position, I think, in the NFL, you know, relative to size and all that stuff. But he's also a fluid athlete, so he can bend the edge and do some of that stuff when he is the unblocked guy. And he made Chicago pay. I mean, the reason he got that sack is because of that TFL, right? He chases down that play. They say, okay, well, we don't want to have to account for that backside defensive end on these run plays, right, with an extra blocker. So yep. What are we going to do? We'll run play action off of it. And he doesn't bite on the running back that time. He ends up, you know, being right there when Caleb Williams pulls the ball and he just gets that easy sack. So I think the athleticism is really good, especially like that was kind of a role that Enagbare played before in terms of just kind of like being the fluid athlete type of guy. And he got some good production out of it last season. This year, he hasn't been as good. I don't know how much the ACL injury is impacting him, right?
Sure.
That's a weird one because we all thought, you know, complete ACL tear. He's going to be out, you know, start the season on PUP. He was out there, I think, in those OTA practices, those phase one OTA yep. practices before the
out draft, of nowhere. Right? Yep.
Yeah, so like how much is that impacting him still? He got a full off season, right? So. Yep. That's a question I can't answer, right? I'm certainly not a medical professional. I got a comm degree from a degree mill, Portland State. Shout out, go Vikings. I'm not qualified to make that decision. But, yeah, I think the different flavor definitely bodes better. I will say we all thought LVN was going to start his first game since high school this week.
Did not.
And he still only played like 20-something percent of the snaps, even with Preston Smith out. So as good as I'm feeling about, you know, Brent Cox, I think that also comes with like, damn, we are fast-tracked to a bust at this point. And it's okay to admit that. And it's not looking good right now. Because it seems like the coaching staff has decided – how about we look at other options instead of LVN? And I was not expecting that.
there should have been a little bit more of a tell when there was like in preseason, he was playing into like the third and fourth quarter. And they're like, we got to get this guy more snaps. We've got to get him on like the field.
But that at least kind of made sense within the context of him not starting at Iowa. Right. Like,
yeah,
all that stuff. But the fact that he's not getting better, I will say, like, I think the entire defensive line has been a little bit disappointing this year. I don't think Wyatt's having the season that we wanted. I don't think Kenny Clark's had the season we wanted. Carl Brooks, shout out to him for blocking that kick. But I had probably a little bit higher expectations for him on the defensive side this year. I think we really have to think about Rebrovich and like, okay, he got held over. He was a holdover from the Joe Barry staff and was not only given, he's been given several promotions in Green Bay, right? He was an outside linebackers coach. He was given the quote unquote pass rush specialist title last season, which is like a way to like, in the same way, like run game coordinator and pass game coordinator are like lip service just to give guys different titles and, salary increases. That's kind of the new way to do it for like line coaches in the NFL right now. It's the whole pass rush specialist thing.
Yep.
And then, new defensive coordinator, all that stuff. He stays over. They give him full control of the defensive line. And across the board, they're underperforming. So I think we have to start thinking like maybe there will be a little bit. I don't think there's going to be a big staff shakeup on the defensive side, but that defensive line position is the one where I'm like, I don't know. Do you want to name Robert Saleh like a defensive line coach / pass rush specialist / assistant head coach? Like, give him all the titles if he wants to. Yeah, give him all the titles if he wants to.
He's going to take a defensive coordinator job, right? Like, I mean, if he just like wants to hang out with his best friend every day, like maybe he just like enjoys it here and like wants it. But like, I don't know.
Maybe I would at least entertain the pass rusher market. Like there's some really good defensive line coaches, even at the college level, that are getting these college kids up to speed very fast. And the fact that there's been at least from a season-long perspective, because Gary has been playing well as of late, not necessarily to the level that he did last season before the extension. And I don't think the extension changed anything. I think that guy's I don't think there's a lack of effort or anything, right?
I think he hit a wall last year.
Yeah, but they have regressed from a production standpoint across the board on the defensive line. So
when you look at assistant coaches, right? Like we don't have all 22 of what's going on the practice field. We don't have all 22 of how they're filling out their TPS reports. Like we can't see exactly what's going on. So it's always hard to judge. So like the only thing that we can really go by is what were the expectations, like just like moderate, like even keeled expectations for these players going into the year. And then what percentage of them are overachieving? What percentage of them are at expectation? And what expectation are below expectation? What percentage are below expectation?
Or even any sign of progress?
Yes. Right?
Or even incremental progress, I don't think you have to look at like a season-long thing. But like, I don't know if Lucas Van Ness has not gotten better.
Not an ounce.
Been worse. Kenny's been worse. Wyatt's been worse. Brooks has been worse.
Yep.
And Aguirre has been worse. Like,
yep. Across the board, that's exactly what I mean. It's like, not only can you not point to anyone who's above expectations, I don't know that I could. I mean, maybe at this point, like just off of a first glance, like maybe Brenton Cox is at expectations now. Like maybe.
He beat my expectations for sure. Cause I was,
yeah.
Like,
so
I
like, mean, this guy's not even the only one. Games. He might be the only one that is actually, and maybe Aaron Mosby of like what he's been able to give you. Everyone else across the board is very easily arguable below expectations. Maybe Colby Wooden right around what we kind of expected, maybe, but it certainly hasn't progressed in any way. So yeah, I'm with you. I don't think that there has been not only a noticeable increase or appreciation in any of these players, it has been significantly worse across the board, which is extremely concerning. And there is a defensive change, right? You're obviously going to 4-3. I'll ask you, I don't think that this is a huge thing that they've gone from 3-4 to 4-3. When it comes to these players and performance, I'm sure there was maybe an adjustment period, but obviously feel free to disagree if you disagree. But to me, like beat the guy in front of you. And I just haven't seen it consistently enough from any of them.
Yeah. I don't worry much about the scheme thing. I mean, even coming into the year, the two guys I had question marks, right, were Slayton and Preston Smith. Preston Smith was a guy who dipped out. That made way more sense to me because he's a guy whose best traits are the fact that he's a long edge setter and that he has value as a guy who can drop into coverage. And that's just not something that you're going to do when your hand is in the dirt, right? Especially in this scheme where, you know, you want to pin your ears back and kind of get after the quarterback and you're trying to cause disruption in the backfield first and foremost. So I understand from his perspective, the Slayton stuff is like, I would have to look at the numbers. Slayton isn't playing that much, right? But yeah. I would have to look at the numbers and how involved he is on like some of these stunts. That's certainly not something that I would want him to do just because I don't think you want a guy that big moving laterally. I think Kenny Clark does a whole lot better job of that than him, even though, you know, they're both bigger guys, but Slayton's even bigger than him. But everyone else is like, no, you fit the scheme. This is kind of, you know, we don't have a bunch of slow guys out there, which is really what you're fighting if you're fighting that transition. So,
speaking of Preston Smith, 22 pass rush snaps in Pittsburgh so far, one pressure. He got his first pressure this week. So not exactly tearing it up in the new 3-4 over in Pittsburgh so far. He is great.
I don't think that's why they traded for him. I didn't think they were like third down specialist Preston Smith. I think they were like, we have no backups and he can at least give us something. Let's give him a 7th round pick. We're going to the playoffs.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. That's certainly not what they were bringing him in for. But no, it hasn't exactly changed his trajectory in that standpoint. And yeah, again, going back to the defensive line, I think you got to figure out something because there's too much talent on that line to be playing this poorly and just not progressing and just frankly regressing along the line. We talked about the secondary. We talked about pressure along the defensive line. That only leaves us one spot left to go at the defensive position. And that, of course, is linebacker. Public enemy number one across a lot of the interwebs is number 7 along that defense. Yeah, I'll leave it at that. Take it away wherever you want to go with this.
Quay was a problem. No doubt about it. And Quay has been a problem at different stretches during the season and during his career. So I don't know what you want to do with him. He's a guy that I think if you had him be a third round specialist type of guy and run some of these picks and stunts and stuff like that, maybe you could still call it a quote unquote linebacker. He could help you there just because he's so athletic. But in terms of playing assignment football, I mean, it's just not there. And I thought a different issue on the linebacker front was actually the Edgerrin Cooper stuff. And that wasn't necessarily because of him, unless you want to call it like the angles that he was taking with Caleb Williams. I think he probably underestimated Caleb Williams' speed a little bit. But we're running into this situation now that we didn't have at the beginning of the year. And I see a lot of Packers fans being like, you know, why were we able to bottle up an Anthony Richardson and a Jalen Hurts and all this stuff from scrambling and Caleb Williams runs for 70 yards against us? Well, they're kind of playing a different defense now. Before it was, you know, we're rushing four. We're going to must rush with our ends. Our penetration has to come from knockback from those interior defensive linemen, and we'll just clean it up on the outside when that guy decides to break out of the pocket. Well, now when you're moving the front and everything is crazy, right? Edgerrin Cooper sitting back there and playing kind of almost like a quarterback spy position. It's not necessarily that, but like when the quarterback leaves the pocket, he's the one who has to end up chasing him, right? Which is something he did very well at A&M. Everyone talked about that's kind of all he did. He didn't really play real linebacker. He was just kind of like this run and chase guy for A&M. But Caleb Williams is seeing all the stunts and stuff, and he's saying like, okay, that guy has quarterback contained, but he's 2 gaps behind me. So I'm just going to teleport to the sideline. Caleb Williams isn't a guy who has like a 10 out of 10 speed, right? But he can go from gear 1 to gear 4 like
quick.
He doesn't have a 5th gear, but he can go from gear 1 to gear 4 like that. And I think that's kind of what the Packers underestimated a little bit in this game. Definitely bit him in the ass for, I mean, it down to the last drive, right? He had that run on that last drive. So it's going to be different for sure with all these stunts and twists and picks and stuff that they're having to do because they can't get any pass rush naturally, right? These are the issues that arise when you're playing this single high defense and you're trying to drop all these guys into coverage, but you can't get home with those 4. So what do? We have to bring different players. We have to move what gaps we're attacking and all that stuff. And that also presents some issues.
Yeah, it really has. And I don't know that there's a perfect fix. The thing that shocks me about the linebacker position is with Green Bay seemingly willing to have competition in a variety of different spots and sub guys in and out, like the one player that they are like, you know, nope, or he's the starter every single play, no matter what. And maybe the green dot is just that important to them that like they want
to give it to McKinney. The green dot is not that important. Give it to McKinney. He's on the field every play.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't understand that either. And it's not like when Quay was out a game, it's not like everything just fell apart of like, oh, we can't get plays on the field. Like they figured it out. Yeah. So the fact that like, it's just a non-starter that like the discussion's not even there, that he's just out there at every single play. There's no competition, any of it. That's what's frustrating. Again, to your point, I think there's ways to utilize him in different ways. But to me, he's a platoon player. He's not a full-time guy. Yeah. You have to figure out ways to utilize his skills in the right way and putting them out there every single snap and being in the center of the defense. To me, that is clearly at this point, not the way to do it. I feel like we just finished one crusade of like, all right, enough with the Eric Stokes stuff. And we finally got to that point. And now it's like, all right, now we have to pick up an entirely different crusade and be like, all right, it's enough with the Quay stuff.
Yeah. This game felt like my breaking point a little bit on the
Quay big stuff, time. Big
where
time.
It was just like, man, they can just run at us and he's not fitting in well. And he's been here, what, 3 years now?
Two and a half, three years.
And it's just like, okay, he can't, he just simply cannot be in every, like the data just stacks up against him, right? I really do think Wilson, McDuffie, and Cooper, who just got here and, you know, missed the entire preseason, are better run defenders than him, right? So if you want to say Wilson's physically physically limited, McDuffie's physically limited, okay, play Quay on third downs. Yep. But I don't think he's an every down player right now. Should not be. I mean, I still expect him to be that. The Packers are seemingly like 2 weeks behind us. So
yeah, it's always weird when that stuff happens. And I don't know, maybe I'm naive or maybe I'm smart. I don't know which one it is. It's probably neither, but I always like want to give them the benefit of the doubt. Obviously they see these guys practice every single day. It's
been 3 years. You can't say we didn't give the guy a shot.
Yeah. Me big time. Right? Like, it's not again. And this to me was very much my breaking point as well, where like, even like in the pregame before the game, I was talking about the substitute stuff of like just platoon them, figuring out things. And like, I got in that game and I'm like, I'm well past platooning at this point. I'm like just ready to be completely done with the entire experience. I was ready for Jamin Davis, Tyron Hopper. Like I'm like, go get Raylan Goforth back at this point. Like I was ready to try anything in the middle of that game.
I don't know if I'd go that far, cause I still don't know a damn thing about, well, I guess I've watched the Jamin Davis film. But yeah, I mean, you just got to do something different. Yeah. It really boils down to that. It cannot be this every game. And he doesn't seem to be taking to whatever coaching there is. And I don't doubt the coaching there, because I've seen Edrin Cooper get better, right?
Yeah.
I've seen you get stuff out of McDuffie, who was what, a 6th-round pick. I've seen you get stuff out of Eric Wilson, who teams
a practice squad special teams guy. Roster. The 30-year-old practice squad special teams guy is
exactly. Yeah. So I don't doubt the coaching. That's one where I'm like, I think you just got to move on from having those expectations for that player.
And that's the thing, right? Like the one, Campanelli is considered, I think, one of the better linebacker coaches. Like he's very well respected throughout the league.
He was getting DC interviews.
DC big time, yeah. Right? Like, so I don't think that's the issue, but like, here's the thing with Quay, not only 2.5 years in, but in a 3-4, in a 4-3 with Campanelli, with other linebackers coaches in different, like they've given him everything. Like they've tried everything with him. It just doesn't stick. It's not sticking. There's no signs of it. And it'd be one thing if like we were just at like break even, where like, oh, the big plays that he's making is making up for the bad plays. Or if even like there were no bad plays, there's no big plays, but there's really no egregious bad plays. Like, okay, I can certainly live with that. But the amount of negative plays that he is accumulating without making up for it on a major positive way in any way, shape or form is, that's what's so damn concerning about it. And you've got to figure out a way to make it better.
Yeah, for sure. I'm with you.
I think a lot of people are. Let's go to the offensive side of the ball. I thought Jordan did a much better job taking care of the football from a decision-making standpoint. Obviously had the one bad throw, not really a bad, like fading away sort of footwork thing. Just missed the throw. Other than that, he was super efficient throughout the course of the day. Red zone offense continued to be a struggle. What did you see from an offensive standpoint?
Yeah. I mean, Well, one, Josh Jacobs, I think, played his ass off.
Yeah.
I will say about that. Because that Bears defense was swarming in the run game. And the Packers really couldn't take advantage of it in the play action game, which kind of hurt the run game, I think. The fact that Josh Jacobs got 4 yards per carry or whatever the hell it was,
yeah,
is a huge testament to him, because I would bet a lot of that is coming after contact. Those guys were flying. He was meeting guys at the line of scrimmage pretty consistently. I know there were a couple runs where, you know, he's just sprinting down the field, but for the most part, he was keeping that offense on the field because he was breaking through tackles and stuff and pushing piles and all that, and really appreciate that from a the Love stuff. I kind of agree with you. I mean, I don't think there were – like, we were kind of – it's a weird thing because he hasn't had a lot of interceptions this year, obviously, right? And a lot of them have been boneheaded. So when he does throw another interception, everyone's reaction, like Vikings fans in my mentions being like, he did it again. He had another one. He missed a ball.
Yeah.
He missed a ball. Like, there weren't too many boneheaded things. Like, there were a couple of times he's hitting his checkdowns pretty consistently. I don't know how many catches Josh Jacobs had, but I'm sure it was up there in terms of
one. Four for 58.
Yeah. And there were other ones where, you know, Love's trying to hit him off of an action shot, and he's the last check down, right? He, you know, Love is going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You're the last opportunity I have. He looks to throw it, and then he sees, oh, damn, you're covered too. And he just sends it out to the sideline. I'm like, that's a good play.
Yep.
That's a good play. That's on, you know, if you're going to say, I mean, it's a bad play for the Packers, but you file that under
a good decision.
We got to call something else in that spot, right?
Yep.
All right. They had a good call for it. So yeah, I mean, I was pretty happy with Jordan's performance.
Me too.
Overall, it was more disappointing that the Packers only got like 40 offensive snaps or whatever the hell it was, and the Bears were able to hold on to the ball because the Packers couldn't really stop the run. Obviously, the red zone stuff, incredibly frustrating. I think Matt talked about it today. I think it was today. All these things kind of like blur on game days to Mondays. Yep. But he was talking about how Chicago was running a bunch of red too, and the Packers didn't have a lot of coverages that can beat that. And that's why Jordan was looking to like scramble and stuff. And they needed more there from a preparation standpoint to be able to kind of do better in the red zone. And I thought, oh, hey, okay, if that's how you feel, then I can accept that and move on and hope for a better result next time. The red two stuff, if anyone wants to look that up, it's like the most complicated coverage in football. Every team doesn't do it. I have not bothered to learn it. I understand like what Saban does in the middle of the field and all that stuff, but red two is, it's nuts. And I don't envy anyone who's having to face that. I mean, they were basically saying, right, that, you know, they were trying to run, and every time they called a run, it was man coverage. You know, you're getting a maxed out front in terms of run fits, and then when you're passing, you're getting red two, and they didn't have beaters for it. And I'm like, sounds like hell. Glad I don't have to deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I thought their red zone defense was fantastic. Like there were, yeah. I went through and I watched every red zone play of like, all right, because everyone, of course, it's very results oriented. If you don't score in the red zone, it's like, well, all the play calls were bad. It's like, all right, let's look at it. And
You have to know so much in that situation to say that those play calls are bad, because so much is dependent, especially down there, on down and distance, what the team's tendencies were coming in.
Yep.
Did you guess those tendencies? If you guess those tendencies, did they have tendency changers? When did you realize they had tendency changers? Did they stay consistent to those tendency changers? Like at some point, it does become a game of like rock, paper, scissors. So to kind of sit back, and I'm a guy who watches, like I watched the Bears' last three games coming into this, right? I've watched every snap of the Packers season. I don't feel like I have enough information to judge that.
Yep.
Honestly. So
for real. Yeah.
Yeah. It's at some point it turns into a game of like rock, paper, scissors down there. And if you don't get it, you don't get it. And I just don't know if it's like throw out the entire red zone offense. Right. I think Matt's answer where he was like, we need more red two beaters if we know that we're going to get red two in certain situations. All right. I'll take that at face value.
Yeah, get them drawn up. I mean, like to your point, like one of the plays I pointed out, and Matt talked about it today as well, They obviously have the play where they have the handoff. They can either hand it off or throw to like Jaden Reed, usually on the outside, on the bubble on the outside. And they've run a version of this in the past where they fake the handoff, they fake the bubble, and then they run the slant on the backside of it. And usually after the fake handoff and you fake the bubble and everyone just sort of crashes the bubble, and then the slant comes wide open on the back end, and they call that play, and it's worked for them in the past. And you can see Dontayvion Wicks goes out to sell the block. They fake the handoff inside. They fake the bubble screen outside to Jaden Reed. And Dontayvion Wicks is trying to get open on the slant. And I think it was a safety. I don't know if it was Byard or who it was, but the safety just stones him. He's like, and he's within 5 yards, so he can do that. And there's just nowhere to go. And Jordan,
that's the red two stuff. So it's red because it's red zone, and it's two because it's cover two. Yeah. Right. So if you think the safeties are kind of playing the deeper zones, and everyone underneath is just, you're really just trying to suffocate the team. Right. Yep. And historically, right, in cover two, the zones are the holes in the zone are kind of deeper, which it helps in the red zone because you have the back line as an extra defender and the sidelines. Right. The holes are down the sidelines, essentially, just like right over the cornerback.
The turkey
hole. And then it's the middle of the field. If they're not playing Tampa, which they can do, which is you drop the inside backer. So yeah, I can understand how it's very frustrating to play that type of coverage. The Bears are a very good team at that specific thing. Like I've seen enough at the three games that I watched and then this game. Right. That's a very good team in terms of red zone football. So I don't know if this is going to be a consistent issue moving forward. A lot of the Packers' red zone woes earlier this year were just like them shooting themselves in the foot, right? Where it's like, oh, we get two bad Elgton Jenkins snaps, right? We didn't want that. We get penalties, things like that. Like you're just putting yourself behind the sticks. It wasn't really a putting yourself behind the stick situation in this game. It was just the Bears are really good at that.
I know right now is a tough time for everyone. Grocery and gas prices are soaring, and with the holidays coming up, we could all use a little bit more disposable income. And when you've got less than stellar credit, your options can be limited. But I've got some great news for you. Kickoff can simplify credit building with plans that are the fastest and easiest way to safely jumpstart your credit, making what feels impossible, possible. And best of all, no credit check is required. I absolutely love Kickoff because of its simplicity and its results. Now, I discovered Kickoff online, and it helped me build my credit fast. And as far as those results, users with credit under 600 increased their credit by an average of 28 points in the first month. It's simple. You make on-time payments, credit bureaus see your good behavior, and your credit grows fast. And you can start building credit immediately for only $1 in your first month. Want more proof? Kickoff has over 100,000 positive reviews on the App Store, and 98% are 5 stars. So join over a million people building credit with a Kickoff credit account today. Build your credit fast with Kickoff. Get your first month for $1. That's 80% off the normal price when you go to getkickoff.com/packaday today. That's Kickoff without the C. Get KIKOFF.com/packaday. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/packaday to activate the offer. Offer applies to new Kickoff customers first month only, subject to approval. Average impact of 28-point credit increase in the first month based on Equifax VantageScore 3.0 changes for Kickoff customers with starting credit below 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit activity outside Kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer subject to change. Individual results may vary.
And to be clear too, like despite all of that, they scored what, 3 touchdowns in the red zone, right? Like they scored the Jaden Reed one, and then the Josh Jacobs rushing touchdown, and then the Jordan Love QB sneak at the end. If the Tucker Kraft play is not picked, they get, who knows what ends up happening there, if he can break a tackle or whatever, but at minimum you get a field goal on that. And then if you score on those other ones, you're more apt to probably take the field goal on the next one and maybe not go for it on fourth down. You could have looked in a situation where they got 5 red zone attempts, had 3 touchdowns, 2 field goals, and you feel totally different about it. And it feels like, oh, actually against the number one red zone defense, that actually feels pretty dang good. But the fact that they didn't get points on 2 of them, one part just due to a errant throw out of kind of nowhere that he hasn't really shown that issue this year, it looks a lot worse.
Yeah, I think I'm way less concerned about throwing the interception. That is a brutal kick to the nuts. I felt sick to my stomach watching that interception. especially knowing that, you know, he made the right decision. He just, it was a bad ball, right?
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing to point to is, I can't remember if it was the same. No, it wasn't the same drive because Jordan ended up diving at that corner. But there were, what, at least three plays that were called passes that Jordan is just like, there's no one open.
Nowhere to go.
There's no one open, and I'm just going to scramble to the right. Even just from the standpoint of, like, this quarterback's had a knee injury and a groin injury earlier on in the season, right? You want to limit the amount of hits that he's going to take. That's not a good plan. That's not a good plan. Everyone saw that you don't have a plan. And guess what? Teams are going to try to recreate it. So you better get some answers quick.
Big time, right? They're going to copy and paste it until you show you can beat it. So yeah, you better be ready for it moving forward, especially when you say it in a press conference of like, yeah, we couldn't beat that. Yeah. All right.
Well, I think that's why he said it. It's because he's like, well, it's out there. Yep. Ain't no hiding from it. We got to get better at this. So let's go get better at this.
They'll be working on it. And that's where it's like, it's nice to have Jordan back practicing in full, right? Because those are things that now you can go out and actually practice for and make sure you have solutions to and put things in the playbook if you need to on the fly. So I think that'll help them. I thought the other, a couple of big takeaways, right? Like, we knew that Green Bay had to be better from a penalty standpoint. They have three penalties. Only one of them was a real thing. The other, like the offsides by LVN was like, it looked pretty damn simultaneous with the offensive linemen. And then Xavier McKinney, like playing patty cake on the sideline, gets a bogus, 15-yard penalty call.
That was so weird. And they were trying to call something. I think that was a reaction to the Bears sideline because the Bears sideline blew up. I think it was like the play before, right? They were
Flag,
and I'm like, what are you guys talking about? I don't know. I think that was a penalty that was influenced by the sideline.
Big time.
That happens sometimes.
To be fair, like Green Bay could have had like one penalty in this game. Like they were mm-hmm. much more disciplined. One drop by Romeo Doubs. No strong hands on this particular day. Yeah. But you would
another
have liked
kick, to, another kick to the nuts. Those were the two biggest ones.
Thankfully, they made it on fourth down the play later, so that one didn't hurt as much. But yeah, but overall, much fewer poor mistakes, bad decisions, any sort of illegal procedure, false starts, like anything like that to really put you behind the chains. I thought Green Bay really cleaned that stuff up. And then the other thing on offense too is really getting Christian Watson involved and allowing some of his playmaking to kind of show out. I think, again, you look at it on both offense and defense, whether it's Carrington Valentine, Brenton Cox, Christian Watson getting back on board, Jordan's better decision-making, how Jordan looked from an athletic standpoint, just looking more like himself. The lack of penalties, the one drop, it felt like, even though this didn't go the way that we all wanted it to, and it was a little bit more, it would like to have been a little bit more comfortable at the end. There were some things that I think that they can take into San Francisco and the rest of the season that they did actually grow on the bye week and show some things.
Yeah. If they clean up the red zone stuff, there's not much to complain about on the offensive side. So,
yeah.
And the San Francisco, have you been following the injury stuff in San Francisco?
I know Bosa is in a bad spot. Obviously, Kittle did not play last week. Ayuk is out for the season. As long as Devondre Campbell's healthy, I feel good about that. I'm just kidding. But yeah, they're not in a great spot from an injury standpoint.
Purdy's day to day too with the shoulder soreness stuff. The Bosa injury is interesting because he has been dealing with a hip, right? He's been on the injury report for the hip. He was actually, when he left the game against Seattle and that loss to Seattle, they called it a hip, and then they ruled him out with an abdominal injury. And now he's saying that he was, kind of overcompensating, which, hey, man, if there's anyone understanding overcompensating for hurt body parts right now, it's a dude with a broken left arm and a busted right ankle. He was saying basically he overcompensated for the hip and ended up hurting his abdominals. We might be catching San Francisco at the perfect time, which sucks for them because they're 5-5. The playoff race is weird right now. I was looking at it. I'm like, if favorites win, tonight the Cowboys are playing. I haven't seen a second of that game, so I don't know what 17-10
Texans right now.
Okay. So if the Texans hold that score and the NFC is basically chalk next week in terms of, the favorites winning, the gulf between the 7 seed and the 8 seed in the NFC is going to be 3 wins.
Yep.
That's crazy. I mean, the Packers and Commanders, you're not necessarily punching in and, you know, a playoff spot necessarily, but it's going to be tough to blow it. So if the Packers can win this game against San Francisco, it's going to be huge for either team.
The I don't know how much you like to use the New York Times playoff predictor, the simulator thing. Green Bay next week with a win is at 93% chance to make the playoffs. With a loss, it's at 73%. So not like it's brutal with a loss. Like, they're still going to be favorites to get into the playoffs, but a 20% difference in gap between a win and a loss in this game. And again, basically a win, 93%, you know, you're expecting at that point, unless things go terribly, terribly wrong the remainder of the year, you're getting in the playoffs. Like, this is in a way, like, almost like your ticket to the playoffs right here this week.
Yeah. It's a weird spot. And I know the AFC is dealing with this a little bit too, because I know the Chargers are kind of lower down on the AFC seeds, and, you know, with their win against the Bengals on SNF, it was kind of that same situation. There's going to be, it's going to be like lower win percentage division winners, right? It's going to be like the NFC South, the NFC West, that really come down to the wire. And then everyone else is going to kind of have their playoff seed or their playoff spot punched in. All you're going to end up be fighting for the last month and a half is really seeding, right?
Yeah. And that's even potentially, because if Detroit is up a couple games, if they're like up a couple games by that point, Minnesota and Green Bay are the ones that would be potentially chasing. I guess Philly and Detroit could maybe switch one and two. That would be the only other one. But like,
yeah, I mean, how big of a deal even is that? So like, I mean, it's a weird spot that the NFL is in. There's just so many bad teams in this league right now.
I would argue that that's a huge deal, because the one seed gets the bye. Not only that, but the two seed, like the seven seed, is going to be Minnesota, Green Bay, Washington, or San Francisco, or like potentially, right? So like, you're going to have a very tough seven seed probably in that spot. So I think the difference between one and two is actually fairly massive in this case.
Yeah. So yeah, it's going to be a weird playoff race. The Packers are in a good spot. That's really what you need to know. Knocking out San Francisco would be great. I don't want to see him in the playoffs.
Nope, never, ever again. I don't even care.
I'm for the rest of my life, I'm going to be fearful that they're just going to be able to get their shit together by January.
Has Green Bay beaten San Fran in a playoff game? They had the one in 96 was San Fran, and then
don't look at me. I was three.
I think 96 was San Fran and then Carolina. It was Atlanta. I think Atlanta, San Fran, and then Carolina on their way to the Super Bowl. Checking.
99 Packers won, it looks like.
And like in the
2002 Packers won.
Okay.
But then since then, five straight wins for the Niners since 2013. Niners are 6-1 in the last seven.
Green Bay did win against San Francisco in 96 as well, 35-14, and then played Carolina in the NFC Championship, won 30-13, and then New England in the Super Bowl. That was their path, was San Fran and Carolina. So they did get past San Fran too, but like, there's been plenty of other, the Terrell Owens play, the Jerry Rice non-fumble play, the blocked punt play a couple of years ago, the Colin Kaepernick games. Like,
I thought you were going to say game. I was going to get you. I was going to say, which one?
Games.
Yeah. Casey Hayward. Come on, man.
Had a pick, right? The pick right through his hands.
Yep. Could have gone to the house. Yeah. I do not want to see the Niners. That's just,
And last year, also last year.
Yeah. That one. Yeah. I mean, just not good memories. Plus, I just think that coaching structure, eventually they tend to settle down and find ways to win, right? And I just want to – let's widen that gulf. Let's keep our distance away from San Francisco for as long as possible.
Totally agreed. I guess if there's one good piece of news, like assuming Green Bay gets in, like Green Bay and San Francisco probably both like 6-7 seeds. So like, in order to see them, it would have to probably be NFC Championship fest. I don't even want to think about – I don't want it. I just don't want it. Eliminate them now while you can. Beat them up while they're down. All right, Justice, anything else before we get out of here?
That's all I got. If you want to see those Carrington Valentine's stats, APC, you guys know where to find me.
We very much do. Go follow him, acmepackingcompany.com. Of course, on Twitter at Justice or at JUMOSQ.
Oh, wait, I do have one more thing.
Let's do it.
Let's go Ducks, baby.
Oh, man.
How are you feeling? Daddy's home.
I honestly don't even mind. It would have been nice for the Badgers to pick up that win, I guess, but Longo's fired now, so that's probably a value add long term.
Run into air raid with that quarterback?
I don't know. I saw your tweet on that. I brought that up.
ESPN Milwaukee because they were like, we got to have a different perspective on it. I'm like, why are you guys running the air raid? No, this has never made sense to me. I understand it's like we want to modernize. We got to compete with these other teams. Like
you don't. Here's the thing. You don't need to.
You're not going
to
be dropping bags.
You're going to be a worse version of it than these other teams. Like you can't be like, oh, let's be like Oregon and then like do it with like a half of the skill set. Like, what do you think is going to happen? Like, you're going to be a worse version of that. Like, if everyone else is zigging, if you're Wisconsin, freaking zag, like go back to being a power run team.
You went to Rose Bowls.
Yes.
I know. Cause we played you.
I know.
That team doesn't look anything like it. That defense did play pretty good. Dylan Gabriel, that was the worst game I've seen from him. Probably the worst Ducks game I've seen in 2 years, just from an execution standpoint. You guys did get screwed on that chop block.
Oh, yeah, that was brutal.
I will admit that. That's one of the worst calls I've ever seen in my life. So
I don't even know what you're possibly thinking in that scenario. Like,
refs are the enemy, man. Well, you won't hear different from me.
Yeah. I think as long as we're all united against them, maybe that can solve some problems long-term. Justice, you are the best. JUMOSQ on social media. Find him on acmepackingcompany.com. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. For Justice and I, until next time. And as always, go Pack, go.